Welcome back to the Kurdish Research Audio Archive. Today, we're exploring a really significant period of transformation in the Ottoman Empire, the Tanzimat era.
Right, roughly 1839 to 1876.
Exactly. And that name, Tanzimat, it means reorganization, doesn't it?
It does. Or, interestingly, sometimes translated as auspicious reordering.
Auspicious reordering. That sounds deliberate.
Oh, very much so. It seems like a way to frame potentially unsettling changes in a positive light, kind of echoing the auspicious incident, you know, the dissolution of the Janissaries.
Making it sound beneficial, planned. So our aim today is to unpack what this era was all about, why it happened, the key reforms, how people reacted. We're looking at a range of research here.
And the context is crucial. The Ottoman Empire in the early 19th century, well, it was facing a lot of problems.
The sick man of Europe label really stuck, didn't it? What were some of those core issues?
Well, internally, you had significant weaknesses. Power was becoming decentralized. Corruption was a real issue. The military wasn't what it once was.
And external?
Huge pressures. European imperialism was a constant factor, the whole complex Eastern question. Plus, you've got nationalism bubbling up within the empire's diverse groups.
And economic troubles, too, I imagine.
Definitely. Things like free trade agreements, which weren't always beneficial, and mounting public debt. It was a perfect storm, really.
Now, it's important we mention this wasn't the first time the Ottomans tried reforming, was it?
Not at all. You have to look back at figures like Selim III and especially Mahmud II.
Mahmud II, his abolition of the Janissaries was massive, wasn't it?
Absolutely pivotal. Removing that powerful conservative military corps really cleared the path for the more, let's say, sweeping changes of the Tanzimat. It tackled a major obstacle to military modernization and centralization.
Okay, so that sets the stage. Let's get into the Tanzimat proper. What was really driving this push for reorganization, the core motivations?
You can boil it down to a few interconnected things. First, sheer necessity. Modernization to survive. Ottoman leaders weren't blind. They saw they were falling behind Europe militarily, administratively.
So keeping up with the Joneses, Ottoman style.
In a way, yes. But also, second, a strong push to centralize power again. Istanbul wanted to reassert control over the provinces where its influence had weakened.
Makes sense. And the third driver.
Trying to foster a common identity. This idea of Ottomanism, encouraging loyalty to the Ottoman state above ethnic or religious identity, it was an attempt to counter that rising tide of nationalism we mentioned.
And this wasn't happening in a vacuum. European ideas must have played a big role, right?
Oh, absolutely. Ideas from the Enlightenment, the French Revolution concepts like individual rights, rule of law, modern state structures. These were definitely influencing Ottoman thinkers and officials. Many had studied or traveled in Europe.
But it wasn't just ideas floating over. Europe was more directly involved.
For sure. European powers, Britain, France, Russia especially, weren't just passive observers. They had their own strategic and economic interests. Their influence was often direct, sometimes even coercive, pushing reforms that suited them.
So who were the key Ottoman figures leading this charge?
Well, the sultans themselves, Abdülmecid and Abdulaziz, reigned during this period. But the real architects were often the high-ranking statesmen.
Like Mustafa Reshid Pasha.
He's often seen as a central figure, yes. But also others like Mehmed Emin Ali Pasha, Kesesizade Fuat Pasha, Ahmed Çevdet Pasha.
And they didn't all agree on everything, presumably.
Not at all. There were definitely internal tensions. Some leaned towards more secular Western models, while others, like Çevdet Pasha, sought to modernize within a more traditional Islamic framework. That created some interesting dynamics.
Okay, let's talk specifics. What were the landmark laws, the cornerstones of this reform era?
Two big edicts really stand out. First, the Hatşerif of Guhan in 1839.
The Guhan Edict. What did it promise?
It was foundational. Promised security of life, property, and honor for all subjects regardless of religion. That was huge. It also aimed for fairer taxes, getting rid of tax farming and reforms to military conscription, like a fixed term of service.
It's still framed within tradition.
Yes, the language drew on Islamic legal tradition, but it undeniably marked the start of a move towards legal secularization.
And the second major edict.
That was the Hatta Humayun in 1856.
Okay, 1856. What prompted that one?
It came right after the Crimean War, and European influence was very strong then. Britain and France basically insisted on it as part of the peace settlement.
And what did it add?
It essentially reaffirmed and extended the Gulhane principles, really hammering home the idea of full legal equality for non-Muslims.
Equality in what sense?
Access to education, government jobs, military service, though non-Muslims could also pay a tax, the Bidole Askari, to avoid conscription. It also formally abolished the jizya, that old poll tax on non-Muslims.
It sounds like they were really trying to create this unified Ottoman citizen, but you mentioned earlier it might have had some unintended consequences.
That's a really key point. While the goal was integration through Ottomanism, the Hatta Humayun also led to the formal reorganization of the non-Muslim millets and the religious communities.
How so?
The state encouraged them to create their own internal regulations, essentially community constitutions. The idea might have been controlled autonomy, but it also gave these communities more formal structures to define themselves, manage their own affairs, and articulate their specific interests.
So paradoxically, it might have reinforced communal distinctions just when nationalism was rising.
Exactly. It kind of provided platforms for these distinct identities to solidify and express themselves, which wasn't quite the plan, I think.
Beyond those two major edicts, there was a whole raft of other legislation too, right?
Oh yes, quite a bit. You had the Ottoman Penal Code. Interestingly, it decriminalized homosexuality, though Sharia law could still apply in certain contexts regarding public morality.
That's surprising for the time. What else?
Commercial and maritime codes, largely based on French law, which had to tackle tricky issues like interest rates. Then there was the Masel.
The Masel.
A massive project codifying Hanafi Islamic civil law. The interesting thing is it was meant for use in the new secular court system, the Nizami courts.
So Islamic law for secular courts.
Precisely. It shows that complex legal landscape. You also had the Ottoman Land Code, trying to regulate land ownership, pushing towards private property, and the Ottoman Nationality Law, defining citizenship, partly an effort to push back against European powers claiming jurisdiction over their nationals in the empire, the capitulations.
It really highlights that blend, doesn't it? Western legal ideas sitting alongside codified Islamic law. Legal pluralism in action.
Absolutely. It wasn't a simple replacement. It was a complex layering and adaptation.
So these legal changes were part of a much wider overhaul of the state and society.
Definitely. It went much further.
Oh. Hannah the Chai Lady's here. Rojabash, Hannah.
Ah, perfect timing. Let's see what we have today. Takes a sip.
Hannah brought chai today. Let's see. Takes a sip. It's got a nice warmth, definitely comforting. It does have a slightly bitter edge to it, though, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, just a touch. A little more sugar might balance it out nicely. Still very welcome, though. Thanks, Hannah.
Thanks, Hannah.
Okay, where were we? The broader transformation beyond the law. Right. Administratively, there was a big push for centralization. The Vilayet Law, for instance, created a whole hierarchy of provincial government-appointed governors, administrative councils, trying to standardize things.
And new central bodies.
Yes, like the Council of State, Shri Devlet, which acted as a kind of legislative advisory body, and the Council of Education, Meclis Emar Ifu Mumie, to steer educational policy.
And the military. That was obviously critical.
Absolutely. Creating a modern conscript army, the Nizamiya, and its reserve, the Redif, was central. The conscription code laid all that out.
In training them.
Big investments in modernizing military schools. The Mektebi Harbi Military Academy, Mektebi Bahre Naval Academy, Mektebi Tabi the Medical School. These became really important.
Important how? Just for the military?
Well, yes, but also they became hubs for Western ideas. The graduates formed a new kind of elite, often more secular and Western-oriented, an unintended consequence, perhaps, but significant.
And education more broadly. You mentioned the Council of Education.
Yes, a whole Ministry of Education was established. New types of schools were set up, Rushdi secondary schools, elite lycées like Galatasaray, known as Sultani schools, and eventually the Darülfünun, the university in Istanbul.
With new subjects.
Exactly. Modern sciences, foreign languages became part of the curriculum, teacher training colleges too. But this created that dual system. These new schools existed alongside the traditional Islamic madrasas.
Okay, let's talk economy. What changed there?
Well, they tried to reform taxes, moving away from tax farming with things like the Temetu tax. The jizya was abolished, as we said. Modern banking started with the Ottoman bank.
But there was a downside.
A huge one. Massive public debt. The empire borrowed heavily, often from Europeans, for reforms in infrastructure. This led straight to bankruptcy in the 1870s.
Bankruptcy. How did they handle that?
With the establishment of the Ottoman Public Debt Administration, essentially handing over control of large parts of Ottoman revenue to foreign bondholders, a major loss of sovereignty.
But they did build things, infrastructure.
Yes. Railways started appearing, telegraph lines spread, ports and roads were improved, but again, often financed by foreign loans, creating this paradox. Modernization, yes, but also debtor dependency.
And socially, how did this impact people, communities?
The big idea was Ottomanism promoting equality, this shared civic identity. Its impact on non-Muslim millets was complex, as we discussed. The reorganization aimed for integration, but also formalized communal structures.
Any changes in cities?
Yes, definitely. Urban planning, modernization projects in cities like Istanbul, often with clear European architectural and design influences.
So with all this change, you'd expect pushback. Was there much resistance?
Oh, absolutely, from various corners. Internally, the ulema, the religious scholars, and other conservative groups were often wary of secularization and the shift away from tradition. Centralization also upset provincial notables, the ayin, who saw their local power eroding.
And the non-Muslim communities themselves, how did they respond overall?
It varied quite a bit. The Armenian millet developed its own national constitution, regulating internal affairs, but you also saw Armenian nationalism grow. The Greek Orthodox millet had its general regulations, but faced internal splits and rising Balkan nationalisms within its flock.
And the Jewish millet?
They also reorganized under the Hahamfein Nizam Namesi, navigating their own community dynamics. The key thing is, while the state aimed for Ottoman unity, these millet reorganizations often became vehicles for expressing distinct communal and sometimes national interests.
What about further out in the provinces? Arab regions, the Balkans.
In the Arab provinces, reactions to centralization and Ottomanism were mixed. Resentment over lost autonomy was common. In the Balkans, centralizing policies and the fact that promised equality often didn't fully materialize actually fueled nationalist tensions and led to more uprisings. It sometimes backfired.
It really sounds like the European powers were constantly involved, looking over the Ottoman shoulder.
Constantly. Their interests were deeply intertwined. Britain generally wanted to preserve the Ottoman Empire to check Russia, but also pushed for Christian rights and commercial access.
Man, France.
France has strong cultural influence. French was the language of the elite. French legal models were adopted. They protected Catholic interests and pursued economic and geopolitical goals.
Russia seems like the outlier.
Pretty consistently antagonistic, yeah. Driven by expansionism, pan-Slavism, and claiming to protect Orthodox Christians, they often actively worked to destabilize the empire. The Tanzimat really played out against this backdrop of great power rivalry.
So this era of intense reform eventually slowed down, ground to a halt. Why? What stopped the Tanzimat?
Several things came together. Sultan Abdulaziz became more autocratic, concentrating power and resisting further checks on his authority. Key reformist ministers passed away or lost influence.
The financial crisis must have hurt, too.
Hugely. The bankruptcy basically crippled the state's ability to fund major projects. Plus, rising ethnic nationalism and internal unrest demanded more and more attention and resources.
And a conservative backlash.
Yes, that never really went away. Finally, the accession of Abdulhamid II was the decisive moment. He suspended the 1876 constitution and ushered in a more autocratic era, effectively ending the Tanzimat period.
But its impact didn't just vanish, did it? What was the long-term legacy?
Definitely not. It really paved the way for later constitutional movements, the brief one in 1876, then the Young Turk Revolution in 1908. The Young Turks were both heirs to and critics of the Tanzimat.
And in the countries that came after the Ottoman Empire.
Its legacy is visible there, too. In the Balkans and the Arab world, many of the initial modern state structures, administrative systems, legal concepts, educational frameworks were first introduced during the Tanzimat. Even if later governments tried to distance themselves from the Ottoman past, that foundational layer often remained.
How do historians look back on it now? Are there debates?
Oh, plenty. There's the whole modernization versus westernization debate. Was it an indigenous effort or just copying Europe? Newer scholarship often emphasizes Ottoman agency more.
And whether it was ultimately a success or failure.
That's maybe the biggest debate. Did it prolong the empire's life or hasten its demise by highlighting internal divisions? Did it lay the groundwork for modern states or did it fail to solve the fundamental problems? There's no single easy answer. Some see it as a necessary, albeit flawed, attempt at transformation, while others focus on its limitations and the ways it might have exacerbated certain issues.
It really was such a complex, pivotal time then. trying to fundamentally reshape a vast, diverse empire under immense internal and external pressure.
Exactly. And while it didn't save the empire in the end, the changes were profound. Concepts of citizenship, law, education, the very structure of government, all were radically altered, setting the stage for the 20th century in the region.
That interplay between the Ottoman reformers' own goals and the constant pressure and interference from Europe makes it such a fascinating period to study. Yeah. You really see the difficulties of navigating modernization in that specific global context.
Absolutely. And there's so much more you could explore within it. The specific legal codes, the experience in different provinces, the cultural shifts, the rise of specific national movements. It's a rich field.
We hope this exploration has given you a solid overview and perhaps sparked your curiosity to look further into some of those aspects.
Indeed. The Tanzimat's echoes can still be felt today in many ways.
Thank you for joining us here at the Kurdish Research Audio Archive. We look forward to our next exploration of a crucial historical topic.